Hello, everyone. I'm Celeste Headlee, and you're listening to That's a Good Question. It's part of the Women Amplified podcast from the Conferences for Women. So today's listener is grappling with a whole range of workplace frustrations as she tries to transition from being a tactical contributor to a strategic leader. Feeling burnt out, undervalued, unappreciated, unsupported, she went into self-preservation mode and recently resigned from her position. In this episode, we'll help her navigate a job search and figure out what's next for her. I'm so excited to be joined by our guest expert to help me problem solve. Ellen Lee is the TPM director at Google. She has been leading large-scale engineering programs there for over 18 years. She's also a strong advocate for building inclusive and diverse teams, serving as DEI Council Chair for CORE, also executive sponsor for GROW, and a founding member of Tech Advisors. She also plays an active role in advising and mentoring the next generation of Google leaders. So, let's get started. So we'll begin, Natasha, with you, and I want to hear some details about what it is that's happening that has brought you to us. What's going on?
Yes, thank you, Celeste. And it's basically for really over 5 years, I've been working in more or less individual contributor roles for a couple different organizations. And most recently, the organization that I worked for, I expressed during my interview that the reason for leaving my previous role was that I wanted to have a more strategic responsibility and have the ability to lead a team, or at least a person. And, you know, because I rose through having been an analyst and over 5 years and rose to like a senior manager level, and I was interviewing for a director executive compensation position. And so, you know, I expressed that in my interview and was told, yep, it's definitely something we can consider, no problem. Well, once I joined the organization, you know, I put my head down, learned what I needed to do, and thought, you know, I was doing a pretty good job, had a few system implementations that needed to be completed. And I went through all of that. And after about a year, I raised the concern again about wanting to add a headcount so I could be more strategic in my work. That really wasn't addressed or well received. And, you know, eventually at some point soon before I left, I was told, well, you know, this is a one-person job and we've talked to other people in the industry and they're doing the same thing. And, you know, I'm pretty sure it was conveniently other companies who were doing the same thing, but they are other organizations who actually have a full executive compensation team. And so, you know, that left me really frustrated and I felt I had no choice other than to exit and find a position that was more in line with what I was looking to do. There's also, you know, the toll on family. It was a lot of long hours because all the responsibility fell on me. Vacations. If I took a vacation, work would pile up because I was the expert on exec comp and equity administration. And so taking a vacation was kind of like punishment. And then just, it didn't need to be that way. And so I have left that organization, as I mentioned, and I'm currently looking for an opportunity that will help me to move to that next level, have that people leadership responsibility, be able to be more strategic in my work and also not get burnt out because I'm kind of the only person doing the work.
So I am so glad that you've brought this question to us because this is an issue that is facing all of corporate America, which is an epidemic of burnout. And that was happening before the pandemic. Actually, the WHO was warning the world about an epidemic of burnout looming in 2019. So I want to bring Ellen Lee in immediately so we can talk about these so-called one-person jobs that aren't actually feasible for one person. Ellen Lee has been leading engineering programs at Google for more than 18 years. She is exactly the right person to talk about this. So Ellen, hello, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can we begin just with this idea of one-person jobs and how it gets decided, how much one person can handle?
Yeah, I think it's actually a very interesting phenomenon. It oftentimes starts as a one-person job. And as the person picks up, you know, is able to do more, that the work gets piles on.
Yeah.
Or the scope broadens, I should say. And sometimes also, as other people leave, right, then you end up picking up a little bit more, you pick up a little bit more, and then next thing you know, you're doing two people's job, or it certainly feels that way. And I think what sometimes gets us in trouble here is that we just say, well, I don't have a choice. And so now what the job that maybe I started with doesn't quite look like the job I have now, but we don't think that, again, there's an option. And one of the things that I do try to help folks identify is like, well, write it all down. Be really clear as to what your job is now. Not the job, again, not the job that you signed up for originally, but what is the job now? And then look and compare them. And that is a conversation you can have with your leadership around, do you all see that this is now a different job?
It's difficult, I imagine, and I'll bring Natasha in immediately to talk about how these conversations have gone. But Ellen, I know it's difficult when there's too much space between the people making these decisions about what is a one-person job and what isn't, and the job itself, right? Like that job may have evolved to become quite large. If you can't even take vacation,
yeah,
that's a real problem. But if someone isn't doing that job and is in leadership, and so they haven't done that level job for a very long time,
yeah,
how do you go about informing them that they are ignorant here?
Yeah. And I think that's where being able to articulate, right? And yes, I've certainly had that where you have somebody saying, hey, this is the job. And you have somebody in leadership saying, well, 20 years ago when I did that job, it only took 5 minutes. And so being able to have the conversation, having the data, having being able to show, yes, you're right, 5 minutes ago, but that was when the team was 10 people and now we have 1,000 people. And so the job is much harder.
And that's so true because the population, Ellen, as I'm sure you can relate to over the years, you know, you do have more and more people coming into at least the population that I was responsible for was executives and everyone who was receiving an equity award. And over the years, that population continues to increase as that becomes a more and more popular vehicle to attract and retain employees. And so every year that population is growing between 5% and 10%. And you're right, it may have been okay as a one-person job. Perfect example with the company I worked for prior to that, I joined the company knowing it was a one-person job. And so I actually left thinking, well, it's going to be hard to convince this company. And so let me take my skills elsewhere where I can at least communicate that I am looking for that next level. And Ellen, I see that you are part of the DEI Council. You're the chair for Google Core. And one of the things about my situation that frustrated me even more was just the fact that I was one of maybe, well, not maybe, I was one of two people of color on my team. And I didn't have any direct reports. Every other person who was at my level did. I had people who were below my level, a couple of managers, a level down who also had direct reports. So that part of the situation frustrated me even more because I couldn't help but wonder, is there an element to this that is based on my race?
Mm.
Is that a factor? Don't want to play the race card, but that is how I felt. And that based on the facts, it just seemed really strange to me that that wasn't a consideration to have everyone at the same level have direct reports except for this one person of color on your team. So I just wonder, how have you dealt with that kind of situation in your experience with managing and creating diverse teams?
Yeah, I guess without understanding the structure of your organization, were the peers, you said the people at your level who had teams, were they all doing similar type roles? Like, were those functions viewed as one person roles, or were they viewed as like, this is a team role?
Well, those were, I think one of them historically had been a one-person role. And then, you know, that person justified getting a direct report. And then there was a larger team that had just always been kind of the broad-based compensation team had always been on the larger side. And so the way that I got worked on, honestly, was I would get a couple of people on the broad base to help me with certain things, with certain projects. And so there was the opportunity for me to delegate that work. But without having a dedicated person, it just was a challenge. I would just kind of have to get help when I could, which wasn't always convenient.
Yeah. It strikes me that there's sort of two pieces here. There is this part about your ability to get all the work done as just one person, that there's just simply too much work and that wasn't recognized by your leadership team, but you were actually resourceful and you found people from this other team to help you and get the work done. So that's one, is like just simply like the workload, there was a mismatch between the workload and the capacity, right? So that's one. The second thing though you're talking about is management and having a direct report, which could solve the first problem, right? If there was recognition that there was too much work, then yes, clearly you needed another person to help you. But I want to talk about that as there's sort of the, again, the need-based, meaning like, again, in order to get the work done, you needed to have a direct report. And then there is the, well, everyone else has a direct report. So what does that say about me? And I'm kind of curious, and maybe Celeste, you can jump in on this point, because I'm curious about that.
Let me ask a question that I imagine a lot of people can find relevant here. Ellen, how is a woman of color? There's all three women of color right here on this podcast right now.
Yes.
And we know perfectly well that there's a lot of gaslighting that goes on in workplaces, especially of women and especially of women of color. How do we know when we are being overworked, undervalued, or held back because of our gender, because of our race, as opposed to that just being part of the dysfunction in our workplace? How do we know?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good question. I think that, you know, as I reflect back on my career, because I've had, people have asked me this question, you know, I'm in technology, oftentimes I'm the only woman in a room, less so these days. And certainly at Google, like there's a lot more women in the workplace. But earlier on, people would ask me, they'd say, are you treated differently? And you know, I thought about it a lot. I used to say no, but then I was like, well, how would I know?
Yeah.
Right? How would I know? If I'm not in the room and people are acting differently, how would I know that they aren't treating differently? And so one of the things is really trying to kind of have everything be as, like I think Natasha mentioned, somebody else was able to justify the need to add somebody. I would be looking at, okay, what did they present? And if I present the same thing, maybe why am I having a different outcome? And so like being able to say, like, if I try to do the same things, should I be able to be judged the same way and have a similar outcome?
Natasha, there appears to me to be not only this problem of not knowing whether you're being treated differently for completely unfair reasons, but there's also this very pressing problem of a job that you cannot, not only it sounds like you can't accomplish it efficiently and effectively without having damage to your well-being, but also I can't imagine how you could move ahead, get training to be in a management position, advance your career development while you're completely overwhelmed and buried by work. Is that accurate?
That's correct. Yes.
So Ellen, maybe we can deal with that piece first, this piece of trying to communicate in an effective way, meaning that you're actually heard, the reality of the job duties and that Natasha needs support.
Yeah, absolutely. This is fairly common. I think especially if, like in my role, I'm as a program manager, our job is to kind of keep everything together. And so it feels like complaining that I can't keep it all together means I'm failing at my job.
Yeah.
So in our role, we tend to just suck it up and just do it, right? We're just trying to like get everything done. The downside of that is then the leadership looks and they go, oh, okay, great. Ellen took care of it, right? Natasha took care of it. I guess it's a one-person job. And so there's something here about being able to say, here's the heroics, right? Here's everything I had to do to deliver this thing. And it was not a one-person job. But sometimes we're just so in the middle of getting everything done. We just don't have time to kind of talk about that. And sometimes I would say maybe as a woman of color, sometimes I feel like I shouldn't be talking about how hard it was, because maybe that makes it look like maybe I'm not as good at this job. But, you know, I think realizing though, it's just the work is too much for one person, not just too much for me, Ellen, but too much for one person. I think being able to make that distinction is important.
That's true. Yeah. Because they were, you know, several nights working till 3 a.m. and weekends. And when, you know, I guess when your husband says to you, this is ridiculous, just quit, then you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
You're listening to Women Amplified, That's a Good Question. And our guest expert this week is Ellen Lee, the TPM director at Google. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate us and review us on whatever platform that you use. Your recommendation helps the show reach more ears. It literally spreads the word, and that means more women just like you will hear from incredible Conference for Women speakers year-round at no cost. And if you need a little more guidance, head over to conferencesforwomen.org and then click that subscribe button. Our monthly newsletter is filled with tips and insights and inspiration that can help you succeed both at work and at home. That's conferencesforwomen.org/subscribe. Now let's get back to our conversation with Natasha and Ellen Lee. How has it gone for you in the past, Natasha, when you brought up these issues with leadership?
So I'll talk about in my previous job, prior to this one that I left most recently, it wasn't really well received, but I kind of chalked it up to, well, I joined that organization as an analyst. That's kind of just how it was at the time. I didn't really know what I was getting into. And to be quite honest, that job was a lot more manageable than this next one. So even though I was doing the job by myself, I rose from being an analyst. And by the time I left, was a senior manager. So I had several promotions, but with each promotion, it was still just me with a more senior person on the team. And so I figured in that situation, it would be difficult to convince otherwise, because that kind of was a job I was hired for, right? I was hired into an individual contributor job. I thought that being promoted a couple of times, that would justify me getting a hire. I did get an analyst for a few months. So I at least got that with that job. But then eventually I did leave because there was a change in leadership and it wasn't quite a good fit anymore. And so I didn't have success in that situation. But when I interviewed for the next job, which is the most recent one we're talking about here, I did express that in my interview. And so I felt that that was known, right? Prior to me even taking the job, that was known that that is what I wanted to do. I did want to have the opportunity to lead a team, a person at least, and be more strategic. So I felt more justified in making that request. And when the workload became unbearable as it did, I just felt there was no other choice. So, you know, like I said, there were different levels of leadership and the decision had to come from further up the chain. And
yeah,
just not having that knowledge of what goes into everything that I did, I believe was a factor.
So it sounds like, Natasha, though, you tried to explain that there was just way too much work. Is that correct?
I did. I sure did.
They just didn't understand that, or did they actually challenge that? What was that conversation?
So the one conversation that I kind of alluded to earlier, that was the end for me when I was told, well, you know, this is a one-person job and that's not going to change. So that changed from when I had interviewed and I brought that up and it was like, yeah, that's something that we'll consider. So at that point, I realized, okay, this is no longer something that's going to be considered. It's just not going to happen. And I was told other companies are doing the same thing, right? Other people, other companies have this as a one-person job. Well, that's just not true because, yes, sure, there are companies who have it as a one-person job and there are others that don't. And so it was just kind of one of those blanket statements.
Yeah, I'm always skeptical of any time someone says this is how it's done. But
right.
Also, really good research shows that Black women in particular are more ambitious, more likely to say they want to advance than average, but less likely to find mentors that help them. This is also often true of Asian American women. And I wonder, Ellen, if it might be useful at this point for Natasha to find a mentor, an advocate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that having a mentor and certainly an advocate or a sponsor in the organization, right? Somebody who has visibility into the work that you do and you've done can help to at least provide more visibility into what you're doing. So when they say, when somebody in leadership says, I think this is a one-person job, there's somebody else who can say, well, I've seen the work and it's more, right? More than one person can do. But Celeste, if you're referring to sort of mentorship even outside of the organization, I think having someone to help brainstorm ways to talk to the leadership team about your challenges, right? Absolutely, I think would be very helpful. Is that something you have, Natasha?
Not officially. It's interesting, since I left the company, I've had a couple people who have really latched on and are just determined to help me in my search, which is really encouraging. These are people outside of the company that I worked with, a couple vendors actually for systems that I implemented. And so that's been encouraging, but I don't have a go-to mentor person. And that's something that I was hoping to find in this organization. It was a fairly large organization, but I feel like I was just always head down and getting work done and didn't really have time for that. So that's something I definitely recognize is key to have a sponsor in your organization and something I'd be looking for. And Ellen, I also wanted to ask both Ellen and Celeste, how did you get past that initial, it's probably been several years now, but that initial, because what I'm going through, I'm looking for a job where I want to have management responsibility, not necessarily on day one, but eventually. So how do you get past that hurdle of, well, you don't have people leadership experience. We're looking for someone with people leadership experience. How do you, you know, I communicate that's what I'm looking for. And I've had manage people indirectly. I've had an intern, but how do you get past that as a hurdle in applying for jobs and interviewing when the question comes up about your people leadership experience?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Like, how can you be qualified for a role, right? Like, if you've never had that experience, but how are you going to get that experience if you're never offered that opportunity?
Right.
That's a great question. And I think the way I'm going to answer this, though, might, I don't know how this will land, though, with this conversation, because I don't think of people leadership as only meaning you're leading a team of people who report to you.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So in my mind, people leadership is you're leading, whether it's, you know, you mentioned, Natasha, that you, for some of your projects, you were able to get resources from another team. You also earlier said you've indirectly managed or led people. And that means you have a vision, you have a plan, you're getting the group together to work on something together. That's people leadership. And so when people say, do you have people leadership experience? Or you can say, well, I don't have direct people management experience, but here's how I have led people. Here's how I have coached and mentored people. If you have those experiences, then you should certainly be able to talk about them. If you don't, which, I mean, maybe you have some, but not enough, then the next role you find, if it's an individual contributor role, maybe it's finding the opportunities to do that type of leadership there. So again, they don't have to report to you. In fact, what I found is if you can get followership from people who don't report to you, that's even more powerful, because here are people who say, yeah, you know, Natasha is my leader. I don't report to her, but like, I believe that she is a wonderful leader. And that's incredibly powerful.
I would also just give a couple more suggestions here, because the way that I was able to break through that ceiling, I did a couple things. Number one, I found opportunities for myself, like short-term projects that I could do where I could lead people. And so I sort of made the opportunities myself. The other thing I did is I went out and I got training with some people who then acted as my references for my people leading skills. So like I found some management training, some leadership training, and then the leaders of those workshops were the people speaking for me and my references as I tried to advance forward. And it really worked out because they're trainers, so their word meant something. But Ellen is, I mean, all of these ideas is all about sort of giving yourself the qualifications.
Right.
Yeah.
And not waiting for someone else to say, you're qualified, you're ready, but you saying, I am ready, and so I'm going to go ahead and do this, which I highly, highly recommend. But I would also say that finding yourself an advocate, even if you don't find a mentor within the organization you're in right away, finding an advocate, someone who, even if they're on the same level as you or someone who might attend the same meetings, someone who backs you up can be really valuable.
Right, exactly. And you know, I know you've already left that company, but you mentioned that's the person who ran a team that had sort of these resources you would tap into, right? Like right. That might have been a person who could have been had said, yeah, I mean, Natasha is already leading these folks and being able to speak to sort of your capabilities and your skills there.
Yes, absolutely. We're getting ready to wrap up. I wonder, Natasha, if there were any last questions you want to ask, or Ellen, any last bits of golden wisdom that we could get from you?
Why don't I let Natasha go first?
Yeah, I know. Just like Celeste said, any nuggets of wisdom I would appreciate. I am going through the job search process and obviously being very selective because I know what I'm looking for. And I definitely won't make the mistake of going into a situation where I will end up being an individual contributor again. So I just want to hear from you, Ellen, any words of advice in terms of how to target my search, how to present what I'm looking for in terms of the leadership opportunity, strategic work. And just, you know, I think what I'm finding is there's always that lingering question in the back of people's minds, or maybe it's paranoia on my part, like, you know, why did you leave that job? I'm finding it's easier to get a job when you have a job. But in my situation, I had to make that decision and here I am. So any words of advice you can share would be appreciated.
Yeah, I think I'm going to sort of talk more generally about when you're looking for a role, keep in mind that you're looking for something, but you're also offering something. And on the hiring side, they're looking for something and they're also offering something. And so being very clear, like in this case, if you're saying, I am looking for an opportunity to manage a team, but really be clear on what it is you're offering to, because then if that's the thing they want your expertise around equity and exec compensation, and you know how to do this, and you've done this many times, and you're an expert, right? Then being able to say, hey, here's what I'm going to bring to you. And with a team, here's this amazing work that I can do. If it's just me, I can do X, Y, Z. But if I have a team, because I have a vision of what I want to do, you'll get all of this extra. And maybe that's one of the ways you can start the conversation so that it's also about what you're offering and not just what they're looking for, versus like going into a role where they're saying, hey, we're looking for it's a one-person role. We're looking for someone to come in and do this. If they're starting there, and they're not interested in all the extras you can do with the team, well, then you'll know on day one. That's just, you know, maybe it's not a fit for where you want to go, if that makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense. And I've had those conversations and we've agreed to go separate ways.
Ah, so. Okay. Okay.
Heads, I'm still looking.
Okay.
I want to say thank you to Natasha, because this question that you brought is, I'm sure, something that a lot of other women are grappling with, a lot of other people are grappling with at this point. And thanks, of course, to Ellen Lee. Thanks for joining us and giving some advice to someone who really can use it.
Absolutely. I hope this was helpful. And thank you for having me. It's such a wonderful program. I'm so excited to be part of it.
And thanks to you, Natasha.
Yes, thank you so much for selecting my question. Thank you for all the great advice, Ellen and Celeste as well. Really, really grateful to have been part of this conversation.
And good luck with your job search.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
We so hope you enjoyed this episode of That's a Good Question. I, for one, am excited to check back with Natasha and see how she's doing in the months ahead. Thanks again to our guest expert, Ellen Lee, from Google. If you need a little more guidance and inspiration from the Conferences for Women, be on the lookout about registration openings for our fall 2022 events. Tickets will go on sale for the Pennsylvania, Texas, and Massachusetts conferences in late May and early June. Details will be emailed to your inbox. They're also available always at our website. It's conferencesforwomen.org. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 55,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and California, and recently, online. I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.